Part 5. Hope Has Wings, 1980 to 1993. Chapter 29. Samaritans and Lions. Briefcase in hand, I pushed through the large glass rotating doors and walked into the foyer of the Charing Cross Hotel. It is one of the classic central London hotels, deep carpets, ornate furnishings and graceful chandeliers. This was December 1980, 4 years after we had issued our statement of intent. We were still flying low financially. A slight, dark-haired man in a grey suit greeted me with a pleasant Scots accent. "Stuart King?" "I'm David Cormack." It was my first meeting with Dr. Cormack. Ron Collard, our full-time MAF representative in the UK, who knew I was looking for a good Christian management advisor, had met David at one of his meetings and found him interested in MAF. He also discovered he was in charge of training and organisation development at the headquarters of Shell International in London. We moved through into one of the lounges, settled in a quiet corner, and David ordered tea. But we hadn't met for a pleasant tête-à-tête. I had burdens I wanted to share. David was soon asking me about the background of MAF, my hopes and visions for it, and what problems we were facing. It took several hours to give him an overview of our organisation. I explained something of the pressures and tensions of this particularly difficult period. I wondered whether I was the man for the job any longer. Perhaps someone more capable should take over as chief executive. I was interested in his opinion. It could be more objective than mine. What did David think from his own experience? "Do you feel your work with MAF is finished, Stuart?" I looked at him with surprise. There was much I still wanted to see achieved. "No, there's so much more I'd like to see done," I answered. "Then you should stay and see it done. Let's work on a plan to see how the necessary goals can be accomplished." Within a couple of weeks, he was in our Folkestone headquarters. Through the next year, he gave time and advice without stint. Some things that worked for Shell International wouldn't work for us, but many of the basic principles would. Our management structure was improved. We redefined goals for each department of MAF. Field operations, finance, administration, public relations, recruiting, and training. A recovery plan was made to keep running expenses to a minimum and at the same time generate new support and income. Weeks were spent in working out, budgeting, and applying the plan. For 10 years, we'd been seeking to improve our management skills. I had attended excellent seminars in Nairobi. We had used management consultants in our work there. We fully realised that developing these skills was no substitute for the work of God's Spirit in our hearts, but we recognised that they could be God-given tools. We had experience in flying and maintaining aircraft, and a good understanding of mission pioneering and of the growth of the church overseas. But we had still lacked sufficient management experience to handle what MAF had now become. It was because of this that I was grateful to God for David Cormack. "How can you plan 10 years ahead?" people asked. But that's just what we did. We carefully worked out what we believed should happen over the next decade, right into the 1990s. With David's help, this was translated into a long-term strategic plan. I'd done a great deal of research into the future needs of the churches and missions we served overseas, visiting our different fields to collect data. It had been a challenging and revealing exercise. MAF was wanted. Its services needed to increase to meet the demands. We looked at trends and opportunities worldwide. We considered the position of supporting churches in the homelands. The strategic plan was drawn up in faith and much prayer. The first years could obviously be worked out in much greater detail than the later ones. Nevertheless, we envisaged increasing impetus throughout, based on our belief that God wanted us to respond to the many opportunities before us. How were we to get to the point where we could do this? We looked first at our current position. We were in touch with 10,000 people who prayed for us regularly, many of whom were able to contribute to our support as well. But it was amazing how many churches, how many Christians still knew nothing about MAF. We were still the best-kept secret in the UK. One thing we needed to do was improve our publicity and increase the circle of those concerned and involved. We particularly wanted support from people not already committed to other missions. We wanted to see interest in overseas missions and churches increased, not just reshuffled. We also looked to stronger links with other European countries, a few of which had already set up MAF groups. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he fell into the hands of robbers. But a Samaritan, as he travelled, came where the man was, took pity on him, bandaged his wounds, brought him to an inn and took care of him. The future position we believed God wanted for MAF, we named the Good Samaritan Scenario. Like the Good Samaritan, we longed to be able to respond effectively to those in need. Wishful thinking? A futile vision? No. MAF had been founded on the call of God and the belief that He was able to supply our needs. The call and the belief were as valid as ever. We believed God intended that within 10 years we should have adequate staff and finances to carry on our task. The strategic plan set us clear aims and priorities. We knew which way we had to go, which things were important. I met with our MAF managers regularly at headquarters to clarify our goals and try to ensure that we were keeping to the plan God had given us. We defined the key activities of each department, listed the expected results, and decided how we would assess their achievements. We monitored progress, seeking to avert diversion from the main aims. The task of making MAF known in the UK had been energetically carried out by Steve Stevens as part of his work as Home Director. 5 years after Tom Frank had taken over that role, Ron Collard came in to be responsible full-time for key church meetings, visiting schools, and encouraging local MAF representatives. He also fostered the growth of many prayer groups, but he still had to refuse many invitations. Eventually, we were able to appoint several full-time regional managers under Ron. By then, the different MAF groups around the world were serving nearly 400 mission and relief agencies. This enabled representatives to present a panoramic view of God's work, a view to stir the imagination, encourage faith and commitment. Publicity was improved. Better film strips and films, and later high-quality videos were produced. Our existing supporters played an active part in bringing in others. The circle of those seriously interested was increased by 20%. The work of every department was geared towards the Good Samaritan scenario. Recovery was slow at first, but we had expected that. But even during this early period, there were gaps in the clouds through which the sun shone brightly. Some supporters responded continuously and tremendously to our needs. One man wrote to say that he believed God wanted him to give a large part of his savings to MAF. But for his gift, we would not have been able to keep going that particular year. Surely a good Samaritan. The Royal Air Force Chaplains Department, which designated its church collections to some Christian organization each year, chose MAF. Its target was to buy us a Cessna. By the end of the year, it had raised more than enough to buy our first Cessna 210. This newer type was similar in size to the 206, but its cleaner design and a retractable undercarriage made it faster and cheaper to fly. Money left over from the purchase of the 210 went towards yet another aircraft. People, too, continued to come from the RAF and from other air forces as well. Trusts and funding agencies helped with capital items such as hangars, aeroplanes, and housing. Some of the missions who used us were generous donors too. How many aeroplanes could you use for your work in Africa? The question came from an aristocratic Swedish gentleman, Ture Nidran. He was sitting in my office with an equally dignified compatriot, Lars Brau. They had arrived at short notice on a Saturday, when our headquarters were normally closed. A phone call had told me simply that they were from Lions International and wished to talk about getting us an aircraft. I didn't know what to think. What did they want to propose? What restrictions would be attached to any gift they might make? What was their motive? What was it all about? I called in two MAF managers who were available at the time, together with one of our board members who lived locally, to help assess the situation. Ture Nidran told us that he was chairman of Lions International Air Relief in Sweden. Lars Brau was founder of the Von Rosen Foundation. For a number of years, we have been supporting the humanitarian work of the Swedish Count Carl Gustaf von Rosen in Ethiopia, Ture explained. We have supplied him with aircraft for relief operations. He is now dead, but we want to continue to help in a similar way. What do you know about our work? I asked. We learnt of it while assisting in Ethiopia. We know that you help people at grassroots level. We'd like to try and get some aircraft for you. I thanked them, but asked if they knew we weren't just a philanthropic organization, but a Christian one, albeit involved in medical, humanitarian, and development work as part of our call to serve God and show his love to those in need. Yes, they were aware of this. Would there be strings attached? I asked them. Would you want the planes located in specific places, or just serving Swedish missionaries, or flown only by Swedish pilots? No, there would be no such conditions, came the clear reply. Ture came back to his point. How many aeroplanes could you use at present? Rarely before had we been approached by a donor agency asking what it could give. Normally, we'd had to take the initiative in approaching trusts and foundations. They'd naturally required that we substantiate in great detail what we were doing and why we wanted support. This was so different. There must surely be a catch. But it was good to meet such an eagerness to help us. I mentally ran over our different field situations and their great opportunities. We could use 6 aircraft, I said. I think I surprised myself when I realized what I'd asked. But it was true. It would take 6 aircraft to meet our immediate needs. All right, said Ture. We'll see what we can do about getting them for you. There was no catch. Our Swedish friends were genuine. I must admit, though, I was still uncertain what would come of it. But even one plane would help. 4 years later, I visited Sweden for the dedication of the 4th plane we'd received. Ture and Lars had worked hard, travelling, speaking, and writing to arouse interest and funding. At first, the response had been small. After 2 years, I was ready to give up, confessed Ture, but my wife urged me on and typed all the correspondence. Through Swedish Rotary, a Cessna 206 was purchased for use in a tuberculosis eradication program among the Somalis in northern Kenya. The popular Swedish family magazine, Hemmets Journal, raised funds for another plane for Tanzania. All the promised 6 aircraft came. In fact, eventually 7, for another one has just arrived in Tanzania as I write. The Lions and the Von Rosen Foundation were good Samaritans too. Our board and finance committee were joined by a prominent Christian businessman, Bill Cross. His background suited our needs. He was an ex-Navy pilot, a chartered accountant, and had worked in government service in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. He'd followed the progress of MAF for many years. As an experienced businessman, who'd been director and then chairman of an international company, he was well aware of the disciplines and pressures of finance. Bill helped us tremendously. He kept us in line, asked the awkward questions, insisted we made the difficult decisions, yet at the same time, he encouraged us, for he had a heart for the aims of MAF. As with our other board members, I was grateful to God for him. He became chairman of our board for the next 8 years. When the terrible famines in Ethiopia hit the headlines and television screens in 1982, the concern of the Christian public for Africa revived. When we were twice involved in famine relief, the response from our supporters was almost overwhelming. Our accounts and secretarial staff could hardly keep up with the inflow of desperately needed funds, and we praised God we could continue to fulfill the tasks He'd given us. By 1985, our finances were showing a very strong upturn. In His own time, God had lifted the clouds, and we'd learned further lessons of trust and gratitude. Meanwhile, we had been strengthening our links with the rest of Europe, and I was visiting different countries there. Other MAF managers from our Folkestone headquarters were also making contacts. An MAF council had been formed in Finland in 1976, the first on the continent. 2 years later, the MAF Netherlands Board was constituted. By 1982, pilots, engineers, and avionics experts were beginning to come from a rapidly increasing number of continental European countries. "Shouldn't we have a conference of the European MAF groups?" asked KLM airline captain Hans Reicher, president of MAF Netherlands. I appreciated his initiative. I'd often wondered about something like this, but hadn't wanted to push for anything other European groups didn't really desire. From 1982 on, European MAF conferences were held annually, and a European coordinating committee was formed to explore ways we could all work together more closely. Meanwhile, we were also having increasing contacts with Canada. The MAF group there had helped us pay for the Sudan hangar, and the Becks had been with us for years. Other Canadian pilots and resources had been linked with MAF US. At this stage, however, MAF US didn't need pilots from Canada, and the Canadians asked if we had vacancies. We had. We altered our constitution so that the newer European groups and Canada could join our MAF UK board and become more closely involved in directing the work, which they did. 4 years later, we all became part of a new MAF board. MAF Europe was born. We had moved to a much more effectual, well-supported position. God's grace had led us into the Good Samaritan scenario.